It's episode 341. What are they doing? Are there hero bands? And does the average level in Overwatch, as it stands currently in the West, lean more EU than it does NA? Shocker. We're going to find out. Yiska, how are we doing?
Okay-ish. You know, I got a little bit jabated by the German summer, or rather the German spring. It went to 20 degrees Celsius, 25, 24, like, you know, t-shirt, shorts weather. And now we're back to almost freezing and like it's snowing and like it is not fun. It's the April debate.
Yep. Ditto here. I won't speak for Eric in the producer booth, but did enjoy, like, I think we had like a week of like high 60 degree weather. It's been pretty warm. And now it's back to like on my little Windows taskbar. It's like breaking news, like freezing warning addressed today. You know, like it's very, very much resonating with the missing of the weather. Getting up to anything? Diving into any shows? Doing anything?
I mean, I'm not really. Like, I'm still finagling with the, like, I did a recording a while ago. I'm just still finagling the production.
Okay. Teasing some content already. I like it.
But no, otherwise, just, you know, reporting and hopefully doing some interviews soon as well. And no, otherwise, I don't know. Like, just...
Are you chilling?
Chilling. I don't know. Feeling a little allergies coming on. That's making me rather tired at the moment, so... We're coping.
I feel you there.
How about you?
Less of the same, or definitely consuming a little bit more content. I'm feeling, you know, that lack of creativity. I feel like you need to consume to produce. So I've sadly been getting into the Wheel of Prime, as apparently people call it. That's a ride.
Wait, the actual TV show, not the books.
Yes.
You're cooked. You're cooked, mate.
I will say, it has made me very interested to see what the books are about, because without getting too into the weeds, because, you know, I do want to get into the Overwatch of things. You did talk about the report, and we do want to get into that. We have some games to, you know, go over, so we'll be doing some strat stuff. The Wheel of Prime is interesting enough in the setting and the systems to a degree that's like piqued my interest, but then the execution of almost everything is like, okay.
Yeah. Like, I that level of writing, unfortunately, it's omnipresent now, like just like with folks taking on books. I'll be honest, I had a very, probably you would have to say, Three Body Problem is a little bit better written as a show than Wheel of Time.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say it's like a pretty, it's a solid step up. But yeah, there's still some prevalent problems.
I would feel guilty for watching porn plot this bad for both shows. Okay.
Like, yes, there is a lot of like serious thick melodrama that's just like, why is everybody so angsty? This is bad.
I cannot be made to suffer through the first bar dialogue in Three Body Problem. It's insane. It's an insane injection into the story. It's not that the book itself is like incredibly written. Did you really have to undershoot it with the characters oh my god, it's so bad. It's like the typical like Amazon Prime sci-fi show. But you know, but there's actually substance behind it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, there is plot in like the bar scenes of the Three Body Problem. There isn't as many of them as there is injected into the Wheel of Prime. And I'm specifically going through and watching each episode and then watching a YouTuber kind of break down like the differences between the book and like analyzing like book versus show and being like, this is, I just, who, why, why is it like this? I think there are some things, if I'm understanding, like, the gripes that...
Like, it pisses me off that these talentless hacks have not realized by now that whenever they go off rails from the books, the great books that they are trying to adapt on...
Yeah.
Like, your skill is adaptation, okay? Only lose a couple of percent when you keep closer to the source material, okay? Mm-hmm. That's your gift that you were given by the universe. Fucking use it. Stop writing that shit yourself. You're beyond talentless in it. It is actually insane that this shit is getting funded.
Yeah,
I'm raging.
I mentioned this to somebody recently. We were talking about adaptations, and I'm like, I think, because it was funnily enough, we were talking about the Fallout series. I don't know if you've caught the Fallout series or not.
I've not yet.
Finished it. It's probably, if you're a fan of Fallout, I think you'll love it. If you're not a fan of Fallout, I think it'll still be very fun. It's like a solid adaptation. It's a solid, like, it's true to the energy and the tone of the games and the universe that they've set up, and it does it well. Does it have serious problems? 100%. And there is the writing kind of campy and cringe at sometimes. You bet your sweet ass there's some bar scenes, right? But I think the big problem with adaptations is there is this, like, this balance that you just kind of have to nail, and so many other unique works or original works just don't have that problem, whereas it's so hard to get an adaptation right. And I do think, like, studios are getting better at it, but boy, is it a swing and a miss when you do kind of go off the rails, or you're a little too on the rails, and it's like, well, this kind of sucks, you know? Like, there is this balance of trying to do it justice without taking forever or being too slow, you know? Yeah. Books as a medium, I feel like, do lend itself to being a little slower, being a little bit more colorful, whereas it's kind of harder to do that visually, I think.
Yeah, it's not wrong. It's quite interesting. I've been watching a bunch of Frieren.
Yeah. Recently. It's on the list. It's on the list.
And I feel like there are shows that try to flip through, like, a Rolodex of the points it wants to address. Okay?
Yeah,
have you seen The Good Place?
No.
The Good Place is basically, like, a show about, like, in really early on, it's like a 101 philosophy. And it kind of lost me there. And it keeps flipping through, like, basically explaining, like, very, very basic philosophical concepts. So as an introduction to it, it's not terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's very clear that they are just, like, trying to hit certain keynotes very early on in terms of, like, oh, this is utilitarianism, blah, blah, blah. And then they just right? And Frieren, really, in essence, if you break it down, what this show is trying to do is doing the same thing, but you do not notice it to that degree, okay? The writing somehow, like,
more subtle.
It flips through the Rolodex of all kinds of weird, like, adult emotions that we will all go through.
Sure.
And, like, every episode will have one of those of, like, you know, like, it will deal... I would say it's similar to Spiritfarer, the game, in that sense.
Okay.
Right? Like, where Spiritfarer... Have you played that game?
No, but you've recommended it. Right. Kind of explained it a little bit.
Where, the characters there just, like, have a certain dimension of, like, what kind of hardships most of us will encounter, right? And they are just so much more skilled at telling those stories and those emotions than, like, both Wheel of Time. And they're not even doing the Rolodex thing. They do not have to get through things in a very, like, time-efficient manner and go, like, okay, we're going this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and, like, every episode has two of these... No, that's not the assignment, and they're still failing that shit. It is actually actively insane how bad the writing is.
Yeah, it is... I said this to friend of the show, and Overwatch caster and expert, talking with Kenobi about it. And I explained it to him as a fun rage watch, as we typically will do, I think, in Discord. If you want to be a part of the community and come chat some media, we do love a media chat every once and again. Boy, is there some power system or magic system discussions that that are quite legendary. So if you want to get in, links below, all that good stuff. But talking with Kenobi about the Wheel of Prime, I was like, it's a fun rage watch, and it's almost as if like the CW had like a fucked up flipper baby with Tolkien. Dude. Like, I don't know if the CW matters to you at all, but it's like all this like kind of melodramatic like romance, like it's just really kind of like YA writing in a fantasy world, and it's just sad that
you know what,
like
what sucks for me was, if I remember correctly, I feel like I was just done watching either like Witcher season 1 or Witcher season 2 when it came out, and just like the difference just hits you in the face because the source material really are not like qualitatively different. If Wheel of Time is not a better narration in the first place, okay,
sure,
it's totally possible. The difference in how both of those shows transport very similar universes is fucking causing whiplash. Like, it's just the contrast when I watched it was fucking insane. And it was almost as bad as the contrast of EU and an A Overwatch.
Oh, he's got the tie-ins. He brings it back. He's got the threads. He's weaving it like a loom. He's a seamstress of the lyrical whatever. I don't know. But yes, we are going to get into Overwatch now. We will may possibly get back to shows and media and all that good stuff and bad writing towards the end. So stay tuned if that's something you're into. But before we get into some of the Overwatch stuff and a beautiful report written by Iska that may or may not be teasing a little bit of a systematic change, because, you know, I do be loving that. We do have to support those who support us. That's our patron and our YouTube members. So episode 341 is brought to you by Refried Bean Bronze, Babu Ha, Lulshan, Rexane, Sasquatch, and our YouTube members, IRMDRW, Brother Adam L, Ice Ham Jello, Fire Element 6, and AK. We'll start with your piece of work, your report on the possibility, the approaching possibility of ESL Faceit Group adding hero bans to their tournament series. Now, was this... I'll let you kind of like intro this in. How did this kind of come? What was your?
Oops, sorry, I muted you at the end there.
Oh, you're good. And just talking about the report. Like, what was it like getting into the report? Like, what were the hero bans? Like, how did this come about? What do you know?
Yeah. So basically, I've known for a while that Faceit are actually quite active with the Overwatch Championship Series teams, standing in constant, you know, dialogue with those teams in order to get an idea where the product could be improved. And I was quite happy to see that, right?
Yeah, and definitely. I think that's something you've talked about quite a bit, like wanting to experiment.
Yes, and like they've been collecting feedback on certain systems for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, like, sometimes like their updates get more concrete, right? And this time around, they communicated that they are strongly considering a hero ban system. Now, I think it's also, if this is the first time you're hearing this, which is a distinct possibility, do not get stunlocked by the phrase hero bans, because an instant reaction that I think I saw a lot, especially on my Twitter feed, was that hero bans implies sort of like the hero pools, like heavy-handed, bans type of stuff, right? I will say, earlier on, I did hear of a more heavy-handed ban approach being workshopped or being an idea as to what to introduce, right? The actual system that we got is kind of really lightweight and really a sweet introduction. So, that first off, like, because it is so light, it really invalidates the counter argument of saying we only have X amount of heroes. Yeah. Therefore, this is bad. The other reason why, okay, let me just explain how the system works. Then you see the point that really it will not dominate a series in how the application works. So the lower seed will get a first pick of a hero that they want to ban for the opponent. Okay. So it's an asymmetric ban. They ban a hero. They do not ban it for themselves. The opponent, the higher seed, then gets the second ban, gets to react to that ban, and gets to, once again, ban a hero for the other side, and it can be the same hero.
Okay.
So, it sometimes...
So blind bans?
I guess it's
not blind, because it is reactive. Okay.
Yeah. So, second choice is definitely the better one, and consequently, the loser of the map beforehand, after the first map, the loser of the first map gets the second choice on the second, the loser of the second map gets the choice for the third, and so on.
Okay.
As to sort of like give a little bit of a comeback mechanic. Now, because it's asymmetrical, what it produces is a higher likelihood of non-mirrored comms. And the theory is that non-mirrored comms are generally preferred by the audience. I like that there's asymmetric comms. And the fact that it is only one hero ban per team is already pretty light. And now we're getting to the second aspect of it. You are only banning that hero for that one map, and you cannot ban the same hero again for the second map. So you cannot say I'm banning Lucio for
the entire map.
So you take the map pool into account, or the map that you're playing. You might strategically choose that you're getting rid of Lucio, but considering like this grabs presumably would then grab, and we can talk about if it is smart to do that in best of three series. Or, like, in the best of ones, right? If that should also apply there, we don't know that. But best of five series, of course, like, the impact of one map having Lucio bans and therefore shutting down Rush is not as impactful if it was on all five maps, right?
Mm.
So, overall, we really have a pretty lightweight system. I think the common talking point in, like, we first need a hero that does what Lucio does in order to say, in order for this to not be an issue, is relatively shut down because it really only happens for one map per team.
Yes.
So I don't foresee this to be a major issue, and it brings some fun strategy to the talking points. So overall, I think it's the lightest weight system that you could possibly have employed, feasibly. And it is certainly an interesting one to start scaling upwards, right? Like how that does that function? Does that already bring about a desirable outcome? Does it make games more competitive? Does it force more flexibility? Does it force more less mirror comms? And if the outcome of that is yes, I think, and I did ask Blizzard, by the way, this is an important one to ask. So I first reached out to for comment for Faceit, and they said they're constantly evaluating it, and hero bans is something that they're currently talking about, but they don't have a definitive date.
Mm.
I sent a request to Blizzard, and they said they're currently not have nothing to contribute to that discussion. So for now, we only know that hero bans will be considered for Faceit League and the Esports World Cup. Do not know if that's a thing for the OWCS. That's an important distinction as well. It's not to say that it's not the case. And I also asked them whether or not they were required to greenlight this, because in the past, Team 4 were...
Sure, of course.
Right? And they also said they had nothing to share here. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is interesting because if you recall that Alec Dawson, I think his name was, in the past talked about them playing around with Hero Ban suggestions, or even something like a token system of like how many hero switches each player gets.
Sure.
Overwatch game, right? So, if they had to greenlight this, it's an interesting way where, like, we have seen in the past that Overwatch esports has been sort of like the guinea pig for the game at large.
Right? Yes.
So, while I would not say that there's an indication given here, also because they did not give me comments whether or not that is,
right,
it's an interesting aspect of this report as well. But keep in mind, the situation has also drastically changed because now it's not the Overwatch League doing it. It's a third-party tournament organizer doing that, and they could have their own agency, and therefore I struggle to imply that there's a strong possibility that it could also be coming to the game proper. It's just an interesting coincidence that this is also being brought up months after, I think he said it in December, after the, I think, lead game developer, lead content. I'm sorry, I'm messing up the title. But before those guys like openly suggested that they're toying around with something like this. Of course, it's also a change that we, as a PvP community, or rather as an esports community, have been talking for years, and more intensely for at least 1 year on, in order to introduce that. Now, I don't think anyone had suggested that particular system, but it's still interesting to see how it will apply. And because, like, I once again, and that's the last thing I say before I hand it off to you,
sure.
I suggest everyone to not think in the box unit like Hero Ban. I think it would serve us even better if we gave that particular type of Hero Ban the name that the ban system will go with. Okay? So, for instance, like in League, they have Fearless Draft now in the LPL, right?
Okay.
And to call it a distinct feature is very important because...
Yeah, to give it a name.
Yeah, because Hero Ban does not equal Hero Ban. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Like, maybe I struggle for a name, right? Like it's, but I would like for everyone to consider that whatever other system we previously tried does not apply to this particular ban set unless it was one-to-one the same. Like the version or the actual rule set of the Hero Ban is much more important to how the game will be played than that there's a hero ban at all, overall, right? Like, the way hero pools did play is very different than these hero bans will play.
Yeah.
Like, just because, like, one hero... Like, the entire practice structure with agency given to teams will have to fundamentally change, will have to go away from particular, like, micro-macro level coaching to heuristics. Like, you need to coach your players to be smart and to be able to work with these curveballs. We've been saying that since 2020. Like, if that type of coaching, or rather that type of, like, preparing is not already in your DNA, you've missed the last 4 years of Overwatch.
Yep. You're gonna die.
And you're going to die, and it will change, but it also will introduce cool skill sets of people being good at bans. And being good at flexing, and being able to bring certain, like, having plan A and plan B, and it won't be to the fullest extent. And I will say, I agree with the coaches that say that this new system, with the amount of maps that are currently available in competitions, is too much. I think, like, if we're looking at the maps, I would totally support those guys in saying, like, let's cut the map pool in half or something.
Okay, yeah, I don't hate that. I mean, for example, we have, pulling from the OWCS map pool right now, we've got five control maps, or I'm sorry, 4 control maps, 4 hybrid maps, 4 escort maps, 2 flashpoints, and 3 push maps. Yeah, those could all be kind of, I think the front half of that pool probably could be halved. Maybe, you know, slim down, push to 2 maps, and, you know, you really kind of cut back on the strategic depth, but you can still pick from those, like, very polarizing or very stratified map pools where there is a lot of verticality on this map and there's a very flat map to offset it. There's a very, you know, you can divvy up, you can have a very colorful map pool without very many options, and the depth comes in with this, you know, this new draft format, this new whatever we're going to call it, revolving bands, whatever we want to designate it as. But I think you're right. I think there is something important to not get too caught up in the jargon of bands. I'm sure we'll figure out something to call it when it happens. And it's also important to realize that, you know, as Yuska has kind of already mentioned in the report, very clearly outlines in its first paragraph, the report only is covering or has information regarding the Faceit League and the Esports World Cup. Again, like Yuska said, we don't know if this is coming to the OWCS. And if it does, we don't know when it's coming. Yes. So I think the knock-on effect or the immediate follow-up question is, okay, well, how is this going to be implemented? As it stands right now with the information that we have at our disposal, we don't really have to worry about that too much. Yes. We don't need a ton of, like, stream assets because, again, per the information that we have working right now with the Overwatch Faceit League, the secondary league to help qualify for the Esports World Cup, that's not going to have a ton of broadcast. That won't have any broadcasts, to my understanding. Is that correct? There will be no broadcast for the Faceit League.
I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think that's the case, unless it's for those final.
Sure, maybe there's some finals. That's fair, right? Again, there's not a lot of, like, I guess the point here is that there's not a ton of, like, screen time that we need to figure out as, like, a behind the scenes, you know, as a broadcaster. We don't necessarily need to figure out how to communicate this well, which is kind of nice. It's a weird saving grace that if this isn't implemented in the OWCS just yet, and maybe this, they're going to, you know, let the Faceit League kind of test it out for the players first, see how they like it. You don't have to necessarily have any kind of communicating assets or any kind of, you know, broadcast packages to try to show the viewers or adapt some kind of, you know, viewable experience to showcase that this hero is unable to be picked by this team and this hero is unable to be picked by that team, right? Like, it's not something you have to communicate, which is great. I think we've talked about it on the show before that experimentation with this game is going to be fantastic because we need to kind of solve the equation of keeping viewers entertained, and because that's the viewership that we've kind of cultivated for the longest time. Hero pools in the past and the COVID era of the internet was an attempt at that. It was just a very toxic and silly implementation. So I don't think the implementation is going to be like a huge problem, partially because it will be very proprietary and it won't have to be broadcasted.
Yeah, I mean, it would in the case of...
yes, in the Esports World Cup case, 100% that will be, and that's where I almost don't care, because if you fuck that up, then there wasn't a lack of resources. You know what I mean? Like, this, you have the utmost, you have a T-ball in front of you. All you have to do is hit it. Like, you really have to screw it up to, like, you just have to think about it a little bit. You have the resources. You can hire some people to figure it out. Again, Saudi monies. It is what it is.
Can you explain, like, what do you mean, fuck that up?
It won't be like you're not limited by the resources and the people that you can have to try to, like, think tank that out. And you have a lot of time before that point.
Sure.
Does that make sense? Like, you have time to set it up and do it right. Or at least have a good crack at it before, like, again, if your report comes out and it says, you know, by Dallas, Blizzard's going to have a proprietary asset or have some kind of, like, idea of how to communicate bands to an esports audience, that's going to get a little dicey because, again, A, we know that Blizzard's cutting back on budget. We know Blizzard doesn't want to give this the resources that it deserves, at least as it stands right now, until it's a more proven concept. So it's probably going to be a little shoddy and a little rough, and it's going to be, you know, that could hinder things. It could hinder the readability of what's actually happening, who's banning what, who, like, what hero can't be rebanned. You know, there's some details that has to be accurately described, and it doesn't always have to be described. Again, it's without getting into the weeds of it, I think the resources and the length of time before now in the Esports World Cup gives them being, you know, ESL Facet Group, an opportunity to do it right. And I think that that's good. And once that's over, they can feedback test it and iron it out. Maybe it gets adapted to the OWCS. Maybe it gets adapted to,
I mean,
maybe it gets pushed all the way up to Team 4. Who knows? We don't know.
I'll tell you straight up, it, like, whatever rule set is applied, it needs to be applied across the entire competitive system. You cannot do it to...
I would agree, but...
No. This would fuck everything if they don't. Like, if... like, it's already...
Mm-hmm.
Organizations are already treating OWCS as a secondary league, right?
With, yeah.
Like, if the TM rumors are true, and they're not caring really much at all about OWCS at this point, and are primarily focusing on winning
the World Cup,
then, like, this is not going to improve the situation if you have different rule sets that are where teams have to make the judgment call on rule set they have to scrim on, right? Like,
100%.
If this happened, you can start rolling it out on Faceit during the downtime of the OWCS. And like Dallas and whatnot, and I think the implementation onto the Faceit League would have to happen soon. Mm-hmm. It is already problematic that this will have to coexist because, like, if they are implementing it for Esports World Cup, I'd argue they need to implement it for the qualifying portion of the Faceit League in order to get a good gauge and get the best teams there. But we already know that if it is at Esports World Cup, then some of the teams that were chosen by the OWCS performances are not being chosen on the active rule set that's being played. And it is a formative change. I think Platshed correctly pointed out that this has the potential of being I would slightly disagree and not say it's as... heavily important as Rolog, but it's certainly a rather very important rule set change that will absolutely mess with the power levels of each team to a certain degree, right?
Yep.
So
this is the ultimate, like, argument around, like, the playoff patch, right? Like, you are selecting people for a test that they didn't sign up for. Right. Like, you did not qualify under these conditions. Yes. You should not be here.
Yeah, and this is bigger than a playoff patch, to be fair.
Oh, 100%. Like, this is a magnitudes bigger than a playoff patch.
Yeah. So I think, like, if they're making a move, and, like, from what I could gather, they communicated that it would rather, like, that it would might even start as early as Faceit League launch, which is, I think, April 29th.
Okay.
Yeah, it is already in a kind of precarious situation. But I still, like, then you just do it. It's going to be imperfect. It's going to fuck with competitive integrity for the Esports World Cup a little bit.
Yeah.
But once again, like, we can't be, like, competitive integrity Andes at this stage in the Esports.
No.
Rather, like, just, I wish this could already have been thrown in. Or rather, like, maybe that could have been already a thing for OWCS from the get-go. But yeah, I think the speed of innovation needs to pick up a little bit, given the position we're in. It is an interesting argument to make that this is maybe one of the features that could differentiate the Faceit League and the Faceit programs from ranked and from OWCS and in the appeal that it has. Maybe that could get some signups up for you.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't know how big of a draw it would be, really, in essence. Especially because it is a relatively light system. I think like the strategizing element is not as appealing to the common average fan.
Yeah.
Like hard bans in terms of like, oh, I don't want to play against Sojourn. I ban Sojourn for the entirety of the match that I'm playing. That would probably appeal more to a wider crowd.
Doing it map by map is a little bit more is a little bit more work than
The speed of iteration just has to pick up significantly, especially looking at the viewership and the sign-up numbers, right?
Yep, 100%. I can't deal with more people DMing me about their random run-ins with Faceit mods that are like, hello, have you signed up for the Faceit
League? They're hustling. Because I mean, they're hustling, need... to be fair. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you have to 100%. I you know, I think there's just maybe different ways to get about collecting feedback and doing whatever.
I mean, the feedback is whatever. It's just a little funny when I think what might have happened is that they just went like through Liquipedia for years on end. Like there were people that were like loosely connected to Overwatch Esports that told me like, what is up with this? Like, why am I being messaged, right? So,
it's nuts.
I mean, it's hustling. Like, it's, I respect it.
I don't blame them. I think it's just like the net that they've cast is a little too big, if that makes a lot of sense. Like, people who aren't players are getting asked if they're going to play. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's odd.
Yeah.
Why are you do you mean that you want to ask for feedback? Like, why am I not playing? Like, what are, like, I don't get it. You said something and I meant to follow up with it. My cynicism when it comes to like the streamlined approach from all the competitive products being OWCS, the Faceit League, and the Esports World Cup. I wholeheartedly agree that having a streamlined presentation of all of these you know, competitive resumes should be in line. Everything should be the same rule set. That would be ideal. The limitations that we have are third party versus developer, and one is going to inherently move faster than the other if movement happens at all. That's my concern. Is will Team 4, will competitive ops make any kind of movement there?
Damn.
What happened?
Gumba just announced his retirement.
Oh, really? Wow.
Retiring from competitive Overwatch, competing no longer makes sense, giving lack of financial incentives, absurd hours, and the even worse than expected 2024 ecosystem. It's time to relentlessly dominate the corporate world, working 9-to-5 while diligently following company policies. We'll continue with the guys over the next few days as they qualify for Dallas.
Oof. Damn.
Now that's a rough one.
That's a shot across the bow, and I think the comments have it right, where it's like, you can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
For that long, you know? There's just not any kind of stability. And this is, again, that is going to happen more often than not before we get to a stable point. And it's difficult to determine when a stability point is going to happen. Could it happen as we get closer to the Esports World Cup? Possibly. I don't even know that will necessarily hit like some sort of equilibrium or any kind of stability. It will just be a little bit more stable. You'll have teams hopefully being picked up and given, you know, salaries, and hopefully that can kind of keep the lights on for a little bit. But especially after the Esports World Cup ends, then what? When we really have nothing to do, nothing to compete, and there aren't third party tournaments, because why would they have third-party tournaments? You know, it's it's rough. You can't just keep doing this stuff. One of the a legend of the game for sure.
God damn, dude. That sucks. He was certainly one of the content machines, and like, dude. It's a bit of a canary, the coal mine, not gonna lie. I mean, there have been 100%. Many, but
I mean, and you're just gonna kind of see him keep flying out. It's dark days. It can get better. It just needs a lot of time, and it needs Blizzard to pump money into it. Will they? Kind of remains to be seen. They needed to do it sooner than later, and it's not coming up, which is sad. But yeah.
Yeah,
I think a more creative coach than I think people give him credit for. I think that the Florida Mayhem run to the championship was really predicated on the coaching staff that I think he and Albert kind of set up. If you want to give that to Gravy, if you want to say that he had a hand in that, I think that's probably a team, you know, benefit or an answer that they kind of came to as a collective. I think that the ruthless Gunba style of team management has, you know, it is successful. Call it whatever you want. It got a championship, and it has brought a lot of teams a lot of success. It's cultivated a number of players that want to kind of be around that kind of system. And yeah, that's a competitor down. That sucks.
That's actually kind of wild that he also quit immediately and did not like try to win Sports World Cup, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. Damn, that one sucks. And then Gator also says first down. Many more to follow.
Yep.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of folks thought the Esports World Cup prize pool would be bigger.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Predicated on, you know, not terrible information. We still don't know the prize pool for Dallas. So that's another thing. Yeah, it's wild. It's pretty wild.
Yep. Shit's rough. You can't just work for pennies, because there's no stability, especially when it comes to coaching. Players, you might be able to get by for a little bit, so long as you have an org kind of like title sponsoring you and, you know, just feeding you some kind of money. It's not all money, but it's something, and that's better than nothing. And the dilemma that we're running into now is that can these organizations that are coming in and buying up teams, do they have the budget to kind of support a coaching staff or a coach? More often than not, like we've talked about as we approached the end of the Overwatch League, and we talked through the idea of burning it down. What does that look like if we go back to, you know, what things looked like prior to the Overwatch League? A lot of teams didn't have coaches, and the ones that did probably weren't paid. Can't do that forever. It's just not something that's going to be sustainable. That's likely where we're headed. Which is sad. It's going to be back to, you know, weekend warrior coaching, which is only going to make the second half of our show even harder to get through. I think that's... We'll get into what I mean when I put some big bunny ears for audio listeners around, harder to get into. But yeah, it's sad to see Gunba go. A great competitor down, former champion. And somebody who carries a lot of weight in the league. Yeah, sad to see him go, for sure. RIP. Well, not RIP, but
yeah,
pour one out. Career well spent. Came in from the beginning, yeah? He was with Valiant at the start?
Yeah. He will always let you know that he actually coached the first ever Overwatch League game. Then, of course, he left for Valorant for a while. I wonder how he feels about that now. Then came back and improved Flora Mayhem consistently, right? Like, and then won a fucking league with it.
Won a league.
This hurts, dude. Sucks.
Yeah. That's big sucks. Because that's a big hit to a pretty competent team in Ents. Again, a coach's impact is not necessarily something easy to spot. But when you have such a pedigree and such a resume, I think you can start to see how their presence can be felt. And we'll have to see how Ents does without having the brains in the operation. Missing that.
Yeah.
Love to see. Sucks. Very mature decision. I'll say that. I think it's not easy to kind of drop things and just cut tail and get out now. But like you said, if the expectations of the World Cup were a little bit bigger, and it didn't live up, what's the point? You know, might as well get out now before it's never going to get easier to get out, you know?
Yeah.
So.
For sure.
Dang. Sucks. That is not fun, but kind of circling back to hero bans. It'll be interesting to see the feedback that it gets. It'll be interesting to see maybe some of the decision making that some of the players go through. I think it'll be interesting to see the month after the Faceit League, what players have to say. Will it be anything more than this sucks to scrim because we have to scrim one system one day and scrim another system another day because the OWCS doesn't have it? Will the OWCS implement it? Obviously, hard to tell. In other news, we have some games. And boy, did Yiska enjoy watching the games. He loved them. He told me prior to the show.
Brother, that shit. Oof.
just like old times, we get to mauled about some terrible, terrible over. Actually, it wasn't that bad. I will say EU was a pleasant surprise. Do you have a preference on which side of the world we work with first? We want to go NA or EU first?
Oh, let's get EU first.
Okay, the chunk of the meat and potatoes. We're going with the Super Shy ex Oblivione upset. If you didn't catch it, it was the big decider to see who gets out of group. What was it? A. Mm-hmm. Yeah, group A. It was I think we all kind of rightly assumed that group A was going to be a quick EXO space station 1-2. Everybody gets out. It's a great time. And then after that first week of competition, we see EXO go to game 5 against Super Shy. And it's like, whoa, okay, that's a little weird. And then we get to the decider. Super Shy actually upsets them. Goes game 5 again. They get the game 5 win. They advance. GSL groups. It's rough. Only 2 people go out. We sat down and kind of looked at it. My initial takeaway from just a quick view of the game, genuinely very impressed with Super Shy, couple standout members, and really thought that they had strong, how to put this, like, it kind of gave me glimpses, or it felt very, you could tell that they were very comfortable in one direction strategically, but they also had like a strong fundamental to reposition or retreat. And I thought that was like something that kind of underlines a very, not just confident team, but like a genuinely a good squad of players. And I thought that was very surprising. Any quick takeaways before we get into the nitty gritties?
Yeah, I think like it's, I think it was a series that where hero pools of the respective players really mattered.
Hmm.
I think it's certainly an interesting choice on the hitscan certainly. Then, of course, like Ex Oblivione just had to suffer from losing their main shot caller. I don't know if you caught the interview with Commander X, where Chase said he's also like a heavy caller for all the teams that he played with. If you're losing a loud voice, it's just hard to improve. And I will say, like, to a certain degree, you definitely saw that there was something missing, right?
Yeah, definitely. When it comes, like, I think prior to the show starting, I think you kind of really touched on a big theme that happened as the series progressed, especially as we got into Flashpoint, was like the mid-fight breakdown that seemed to happen, going to like Suravasa, going to like Shambhali, where having a vocal presence and to kind of like begin to lead in, you know, those late game, you know, it's coming down to the wire. We need a clear plan. We need somebody to quickly deliver that plan and keep everybody on the straight and narrow. I think that would have probably been enough to push Ex Oblivione over the edge, because again, this was a very, very painfully close game. A couple things go a little differently for either team and the results could be flipped, right? 100% could be flipped. And I think you could chalk that up to the lack of Chase, not being able, not having that presence, and possibly, on, you know, I'm gonna keep it a buck, like maybe even having that skill, because for a team that I have quite literally never heard of, I was genuinely impressed at a number of their players, and that shouldn't really be the case for a team like Ex Oblivione. Like you look at that team and you're like, okay, we've got, you know, former OWL players, we've got tier two standouts. This should be the team that advances second in this group, if not maybe even challenging for first. And they struggled to get some of these map wins. And it's not good, right? It's not good. Not a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, what a wild series to lose, right?
Yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah, that Discord call must have been dead as dead, or
library,
people just like killing each other over voice. Because I mean, if you didn't catch the series, like how often it was basically like one fight away for Ex Oblivione to take.
Yeah, 100%. Suravasa was like a complete, I think it was a reverse sweep, like,
yes,
3-point cap, and they didn't, like, Super Shy did not open those points with like a lead. Like, they were clawing back leads to capture those last 3 points to kind of close out the series. That is rough. And then Shambhali was an absolute fisting, to be crass about it. Like, that was not close. I have been very critical in my notes these days, because we don't typically have too many people watching the games live. I haven't really particularly liked Cloud, to be completely honest. Doesn't have much presence. I think they keep wanting to put him on like May and stuff that like just doesn't make a lot of sense. Him and Shockwave just keep kind of trading DPS. I don't think that's typically a recipe for success either. I know that there's like that big brain, you know, galaxy brain, like Houston Outlaws level, like, oh, we play one flex support for these maps because they're better for his style. And it's like, we are not at that level, guys. Like, we gotta keep it simple, right? And it's just, I don't know. I don't feel Cloud. I don't think, who is it? Twolls is particularly strong. I don't typically like saying this. I say this very sparingly. I think Twolls kind of got gapped by Hitori.
Yes, I agree.
I was genuinely impressed. I have never heard of Hitori in my life. Let me see if I even recognize some of the teams that he's played for in the past. Absolutely not. Quick Esports. I only know that because of Liquipedia. I've never seen a Quick Esports game. Period. The end. Homie can play Orisa. Let me tell you what, I was genuinely impressed at some Orisa play, and that says something. Got absolutely gapped. Like I mentioned prior to, I really liked, it was almost, I don't, I struggle with saying this because I think it also can paint the wrong picture, but they almost kind of felt like NYXL in the way that they would be kind of passive in some ways. Not passive, but they were like hard to kind of engage onto. Like if something didn't kind of, if their proactivity, or if something, you know, happens, or if they were getting, you know, engaged onto, they would be very quick to like instantly react and like just completely like drop it like a hot potato, right? Like just get out of there, retreat, reposition, don't lose anybody. And in the times that they couldn't necessarily get out as quick as they wanted, a number of times in my notes, I highlighted names. I really thought that Tekuno was an absolute stud. Definitely somebody to keep your eye on if you're looking at, you know, new players coming up in this post Overwatch League world. I think Super Shy, if they stay together as a team, has some potential magic to him. I think Hattori and Tekuno are definitely the two standouts. I thought his Kiriko and Baptiste were phenomenal. Definitely keeping Hattori alive in positions that you could definitely see quite a number of worse tanks and worse flex supports probably die in. But also being very being very active in the kill feed, not in the sense that they're finishing up kills, but they're actively like trying to make a little bit of a play. And for a player that's fairly young in their career, I'm going to double check Takuno's resume again. Yeah, it's pretty light, as at least according to Liquipedia. I think that says something. That's definitely like a mark of somebody who's got it, right? Who's somebody who could be kind of on the come up. Two of the big reasons why I think Super Shy advanced, right? Those two players, on top of having that coil like ability. Hopefully that makes sense. Like you think of like a snake when it coils up to like strike, like it kind of like takes a step back to go forward. I thought they did that really well, but they also had some proactivity. I think on Esperanza, they really kind of, and I think this was the map that I used to juxtapose against North America, where it was like, okay, we're at least trying to make something happen in the neutral rather than just standing around and waiting for an ult or waiting for a pick. We're just waiting for something magical to happen. Whereas Super Shy was actively trying to force the issue. Like, we're trying to be proactive. We're trying to make engagements happen. We're trying to burn some resources to make an engagement happen. It felt more methodical. Obviously, it's a little bit easier to do on maps like Hollywood when, you know, you want to run rush. And they seemed very good at it. Again, I made allusions to Space Station. It felt like they were like a rush team. I'd love to see that head to head. I don't believe we got that in group play. No, we didn't. Space Station just qualified 6-0 and dodged Super Shy. So maybe as we get into the maiden stage, Space Station and Super Shy, I think that will be a good game. Obviously you have to give that to Space Station, but I think having that kind of like rush mirror would be very interesting to kind of create that hierarchy. But yeah, no, big ups to Super Shy. Very, very exciting team. I think that definitely the MVP for me was Tekuno. I was quite impressed. Among other things, I think Hattori also, yeah, like I said, kind of gapped a little bit. It was a fun one. That was the fun one. The other one, quite just kind of boring. I don't know.
Yeah.
NA's rough, man. And it's sad because I had a lot of good things to say when it came to Timeless. Audio listeners, for those who can't see, we're, you know, going to be looking at Timeless versus Citrus Nacern, which I think I'd say, just based on name value alone, is kind of an upset. I think Citrus Nacern was kind of the darling, the standout unknown from last stage in the group play. I think definitely kind of put their name out there, and now, you know, being able to completely sweep in like a fairly convincing fashion Timeless, who prior to this was upsetting M80, going close with some teams, like definitely, you know, a good team in North America. Citrus Nacern kind of put a beating on them in a big way. This one, like I said, it was a big juxtaposition between like the fundamentals of Europe and NA's. And I'm going to be frank here. It was lazy. Much like the Wheel of Prime, it was all magic and sex appeal, and we're just going to make shit happen, and we're not going to worry about the consequences.
Yeah.
EU, a little bit more methodical. We had some plot points. We had some, you could tell that there was some planning going on here. Like, there was a strategy that they were approaching this with. Both teams, and I don't think either team particularly played all that well. I think that it was just, and I hate to say this because I think it's a trap that like viewers will typically fall into. This was definitely one team played worse. And did not try to adapt, and just kind of the biggest adaptation that I would have loved to seen from Timeless is move Rocket off of tank busting and put him on a wing. Give him some space. Create, like, were they trying to set Rocket up for success? No. Mm-hmm. Did they have good macro? No. Timeless had piss poor macro. I think that was very evident on Eichenwald. I'm sorry. When you are defending Eichenwald and you get to point B and you take that first fight at the gate and you just magically give up the high ground on your second fight because you want to Kitsune rush all over their face, and you actively don't win that fight, you deserve to lose. I'm sorry. That was unforgivable. Like, you have one of the most defensible positions in Overwatch, in hybrid, and you just whiff it.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. You're not putting some of your best players in power positions. I don't know. It was hard for me to discern if there was a reason why Rocket wasn't felt. Like, this is probably one of, if not, I would say one of, I'd say like one of like the top three tracers in the region, right? Like, somebody who has made his presence felt since the Pro-Am and prior to, for any T2 fanatics out there. God bless you if you're still out there fighting the good fight. But Rocket has been somebody to be a playmaker, to be, you know, somebody in the clutch that can win Timeless these fights, or Wisp prior to. And you wipe the names off the boards and you would never know that that was Rocket. At first I was like, oh, maybe it's lethal. He's holding rails and it's making it hard for Rocket to get in. That wasn't the case. More and more, I would just spot him in Timeless's clump, just trying to shoot the Orisa. And it just made me mad because they were just losing.
Yeah,
there was no proactive pressure. There was no damage going out. We were just shooting tanks and then going, oh, dang, we lost. Throw my hands up in the air, I guess. And then, oh, Eric, thank you for bringing up City Center. Let's just watch these teams just dance around the midpoint and do nothing for a good, like, minute.
Yeah,
I hate this. Hate this so much.
This, like, it's still Overwatch 1 and both of these Orisas have shields, you know? Like,
It like, do something. This was something that I thought, this was like 2020, like Lucio, Brig, like Cassidy meta. Mm-hmm. I don't exactly remember the tank, but it was stuff that like I thought Houston and like Florida did really well, where they would make proactive plays. It's something that I've commended London on early on when like push was being introduced. Is they would take their Lucio and they would speed their hit scan, or they would speed somebody to like an angle. And I know Spillo fans will go, oh, the angles, we got to play the angles. It's true. Like, that is a way to create pressure to make something happen. It will catalyze forward momentum. Yeah. That will burn a resource. Hopefully, that's the idea, right? And that's stuff that you can spot in Europe, specifically with Super Shy, specifically with Ex Oblivione. The big, like, theme with these two games, if we kind of use them as a case study, is, like, which regions have like a stronger mid pack. Like, what is the, if we're looking at the average of like the good teams, who has a higher average? It's very clearly Europe.
It's crazy, not close. Because like, I feel like not that long ago we talked to folks and they had the exact opposite sentiment. And now I feel like, nah, it's just like, especially in this meta, it's just like, I would argue really only Toronto Defiant is at that level, and then everyone else sprinted away, scrimming, you know, the TMs, the Ents, the SSGs.
yep.
Like,
yep.
It's a logical consequence, right? And to be fair, like NA also scrims EU, but like maybe the frequency is lower, or I don't know what it is, because I don't think it's the mechanical talent necessarily that makes it.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. I think it comes down to like, and I mentioned this previously, like you have to be present in the game. And I know that you kind of like foreshadowed this with the hero bans talk, where it's like you need to like be thinking about how to be good at Overwatch. Like if you're presented with a problem in Overwatch, generally, how might you solve it? Mm-hmm. And typically that isn't just switch heroes.
Yeah.
Very rarely is it just, oh, the comp sucks.
Yeah.
That's analysis that I will beat out of anybody who like tries to like, you know, go through some VODs. Don't harp on the comp. Harp on the resources and how they're using them.
Yep.
My problem with North America and specifically this game on this submap, we have resources and it's just a cold war. We're just standing here. Nobody's doing anything. We're just shooting across the bow and hoping we hit. It's like watching Sea of Thieves PvP. This is not what I signed up for. Somebody do something.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. And then when they do stuff, they do like the most heinous, like, I don't know. They unironically Wheel of Prime it, and it makes me really sad because I know Timeless is a better team than that. I know Rocket's a better player. I know that squad has a lot going for it. And maybe it's a meta thing. I think that was definitely leeway that I gave to SSG prior to in stage one, where it was like, okay, there's a meta change. They got caught by it. That's why the performance looks so low. And that could be the case for Timeless.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe there was a change up. Maybe they thought they were a little bit behind in the meta. Who knows? Hard to say. But there was very clearly a lack of DPS presence.
Mm-hmm.
A lack of... It's not a lack of skill. It's really like... And I hate to boil it down to like lol bad macro, but... There wasn't a ton of like critical thinking on like where we're taking our fights on Eichenwald. Very big one. There's a lack of proactivity when we look at Oasis. That lack of having an overarching plan when the game kind of slows down to this like very just pass the ball back and forth state. You know, like we've seen previously in other metas going back to the Owl era, like on maps like the first fights on. What's the push map that's really long at the beginning? It's not New Queen Street, it's Coliseo, right? You think of like the San Francisco Shock in the Justice. I think they had like a historic during the Junker Queen meta where they were both just like throwing knives back and forth and just waiting for rails, right? Like nobody's doing anything. You guys need to do something. Proactive Overwatch is good Overwatch. It's the one thing that I think we all could agree on that was like a very clear law coming out of the Owl era. We gotta be proactive. We need to catalyze something. We gotta make something happen for ourselves because we can't just count on somebody hitting a fat rail and then we go in and we clean up, right? That's not always gonna happen. So how do we be proactive? NA? We don't know. We hope they make a mistake before we make a mistake, and then we speed in and we kill them. That was the gist of it, right? And sometimes that will happen. Sometimes, and to Timeless's credit, you have somebody like Sunjun, who's just going to like charge a rail real fast, gate across, jump up, hit somebody, your team goes in, you win the fight. Great, love it. What happens when that doesn't necessarily, when he misses the rail? What happens when he can't necessarily get the angle? What happens when somebody is marking Rocket? Let's say they do make the mid-match adaptation, and they put Rocket on an angle, and he's a little bit more free to be able to pressure the backline. But he can't get it done. Maybe they answer that adaptation. How are we like chain wrestling our strategy? Nothing. We just shoot the tank faster than they shoot our tank, and we hope and we pray. Like that was the gist of it, and it was so sad. I was like, God, it's good to see somebody like Citrus Nation get a come up, just like I would say about Super Shy. I think it's good to see like some new blood get opportunities. Will this team go far? I thought Tap had some moments just in terms of like mechanical skill. Obviously, I think a lot of people will rally around Lethal. I think he is that kind of plus one player that can really kind of turned it on and just like absolutely shit stomp. And there were a couple times on Ike, there were a couple times on Esperanza where they're winning fights just off the back of him getting two down a tank. And it's like, you really don't deserve to be here right now, but hey, somebody's clutching and you just got to run with it. And there's potential, right? There's potential here. I'm excited to see them get a main stage appearance. They get more, you know, airtime. Will they make Dallas? I mean, okay, forgive me for not remembering exactly all the rules, but how many seeds does NA get? And it's all
three.
It's all point based, right?
Yeah.
Except the winner of the second main stage. The winner of the second main stage gets a direct seed. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a world? Okay, Citrus Nation starts off their stage two main stage, you know, berth, pairing off against the Toronto Defiant. I'm sorry, you're not beating them. That is a shoe-in for a potential finalist. So that's an instant lower bracket. And it's rough when you start off instantly going to the lower bracket. That's not great for points, and that's not great for your tournament hopes, right? So that it's rough out here. That being said, it depends on if that was just a bad day at the office for Timeless, or if there really is like problems under the hood for that team. You do have to look at Luminosity. You have to look at M80 as, you know, maybe the top three along with the Toronto Defiant. And then is there a Citrus Nation at four? Is there a Timeless at four? You know, based on just results, you kind of have to go Citrus Nation. So it's there's a way, but it's an uphill battle to be able to get there for them. I don't suspect that they'll be going to Dallas, but again, it's good for the game to have more names out there. And there's big storylines here, right? You have Lethal coming off of, you know, some limited play in the Overwatch League. He's now kind of this flag bearer for a team that really shouldn't be here. Was Citrus Nation not the team that got in off of like the big tiebreaker last stage?
I think so, yeah.
Right? Like that's a really dope storyline to see, like, oh, you barely squeak in stage one off of some crazy tiebreaker. You grab Lethal and now you're making main stage. Like, that's important. That's really big.
Yep.
Let's say they get to Dallas. Now you get Lethal, Samsung Galaxy, Space Station Gaming, right? Like the core of the former team that he left, right? There's big storyline implications. I think it's great to see the ending here. I'll get off my soapbox. Is that it's good to see new teams on the come up. It's good to see new blood. Boy, howdy, does NA need to stop being lazy. I'm so, so tired of watching lazy Overwatch.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, wasn't
so bad, man.
Wasn't a fun one too.
No, that was painful. That was absolute. Like, I enjoyed the Super Shy EXO game. I took a nap and I was like, all right, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to crunch through Timeless and Citrus Nation. And, you know, we're going to have some great notes and we're going to have some talking points. Yeah, I haven't nearly been that asleep since watching like Renegade and like Ajax miss beats in like 2016.
Yeah,
shit was rough. That was it's a step back for sure. But yeah, I'm excited in some ways and not so excited in other ways. It really does feel like the talent pool has really flipped from being very NA centric to being like almost very EU centric. Like the density of good teams in EU is actually quite high. Like you said, you've got Space Station, you got Ents, you got Twisted Minds. EXO still isn't horrible. Like you've got some genuinely top talented, like world-class players in Europe actively playing, pushing their region along. And you can feel the absence of the Korean talent. You can feel the absence of all the good teams from the AL era, not just kind of like holding up a lot of these tier two teams. It's rough out here. Anything else? Anything else from the news docu that we missed?
No, not really.
Really?
Nope. Still.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You didn't miss. Any other media obligations to get through?
No, not really.
No?
Yeah, no. Just like, I'm just reading, you know, comments of the Gumba threat and whatnot. And
ah. It's rough, man. It's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to be high on competitive Overwatch.
Yeah, of course. 100%. You kind of can't be. Like, you might have, like, hopes for the future, but as it stands right now, you can't, like, this is not something to pursue full-time. That would be a mistake. That would be not good financial advice, put it that way, right? Can't do that.
Yeah.
And for somebody who's doing it, who's been doing it as long as he has, you know, maybe it's time for something else. Like you said, he's done Valorant before. That's on the rails of success, right?
Yeah.
That can't really fuck with that. So maybe he goes there. Who knows? Doesn't mean that he's getting out of esports. Well, he did kind of talk about a corporate 9-to-5, so maybe he is. Who knows?
The thing is, you also, like, I think here a lot of the sentiments is like that I read on socials, like, you know, esports is just really like a phenomenon of like low interest rates, and you just have to look at the industry and say, yes, it hurts, but none of them took a nosedive like Overwatch did, right? Like,
oh yeah.
This
100%. I mean, it wasn't propped up like Overwatch was, right?
Yeah, it's like CS is about to enter another renaissance in 2025 and 2026. Valorant is still doing. Yeah, League is slowing down, but it's still the biggest game in the world. Still innovating constantly, still hosting huge events, still like the major part of the talk of the town. It is Overwatch, and it's how Overwatch is broadcast, and it's how how many stories this esport creates, and it's how interesting the players are, and it's how interesting the game is, and it's how interesting the content creators around it are, and all of that. You just look at it and have to think it's a bit worse product than competitors in the market right now.
Yeah,
and like there are some Omega Copium vectors, like Japan, like a potential reintroduction of China into the market, but like what does that really help?
How does that help us now?
Coach now,
yeah.
Like realistically, like what? What could even happen? Like China to be reintroduced, have their own tournament organizers and more frequently like invite for international event. It's just not likely that there's anyone that's willing
to
bankroll the scene.
It would take such a long time before you have enough international competition to where Chinese, Japanese, maybe even like a surplus or a bump in Korean viewership, just basically Asia in general at that point, kind of starts to carry these international events that Western audiences or Western teams and organizers can use that to their advantage. You know, like it would take a number of these events to have like surprising viewership backed by Asia. And you could maybe, I don't know, you could maybe try to leverage that to organizers where it's like, oh yeah, look at our viewership at international events. We're an international event qualifying team. Look at our resume. We've made it to XYZ number of events. You should hire us. You should give us money. If like that is a copium vector, like, yeah, there is good seeds there, but it's going to take so long for that to happen. How do we fix it now? It has to be Blizzard. That's the quickest fix. And
yes,
I just don't see that happening. And it's sad to say, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, no, it is all on Blizzard at this point. I think like the third party tournament organizers are bringing good stuff to the to the system, as we hoped. We would of course like to have more third party tournament organizers.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it is about Blizzard, right? Like contributing quality revenue streams, pumping a little bit more money into this system themselves, caring more about it, catering and aligning their ranked model more towards it. But even if they were to do that, there's still a question of how proficient they are at that particular skill set of creating an esport in comparison to, you know, other other scenes. And while they're like, I had an article also, I think this week, last week maybe, with the Vitality owner, was one of the major global esports organizations, and the guy basically said, like, hey, of course, like, they never got in because the price tag on the Overwatch League was completely ridiculous, but it's also that the game itself is just not that friendly to an esports viewership. Like, it doesn't transport, you know, what other games do. And you look at CS, and you just gotta have to say that's true, right? Like, if you want Overwatch esports to work, it has to be like a game that works at scale. The player base is much improved, and still the viewership is dwindling. First and foremost, because the competitive ranked experience is not converting enough viewers into the esports ecosystem, and maybe they are not informed about what is going on. But like, yeah, I think like, if you look at Gumba's case in particular, it's actually ridiculous how long the guy held out in the system, being on welfare after, you know, a career high, winning the last Overwatch League title. And also, like, just because, I mean, look at the skill set the guy has, right? Like, he's done all the machine learning stuff behind the scenes for, like, statistical analysis before as well. I think he has a CS degree, if I'm not mistaken. Might not be in CS, computer science. But yeah, like, the earning potential in this current market is fucking ridiculous in comparison, right? Like, the hourly rates that he's about to receive is unironically in the 100x margin.
Right? 100%, yeah. Like, this is... I'll share an anecdote prior to the Overwatch League, during, like, the hype of, you know, the peak salivation of the owl model being teased and unveiled at BlizzCon and whatnot. It was back when I was still kind of working under Baroy, working and writing stuff for Winston's lab, kind of like part time, and casually talking to him, and he's like, oh yeah, like, Gunba and I are like chatting about, like, you know, how to do, like, just like big picture thinking about, like, how to best record and, you know, do the Gunba vision, or the, you know, the automated, not automated learning, but the visual learning, to kind of, you know, scrub the VODs as best you could. And this is somebody who has, like, a skill set that can be transferred in a number of different ways. So yeah, when you say 100x, this is not an understatement. Like, this is somebody who's very intelligent with a skill set that was, you know, creatively used in Overwatch for a long time, that will find a lot of work and probably be quite proficient at it. If I've seen some of those content pieces with him in the past, where he's got like 7 different things open on one monitor, and he's playing WoW, and he's doing a podcast, and he's, you know, watching VODs all at the same time and playing TFT, like, this is somebody who's just like tragically bored all the time and would like a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100x is not an understatement.
Yeah.
So as it's sad to see him go, it's, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing to see that somebody's going to go get some benefits and have some paid time off. What's that like? Be able to punch out. Ooh, scandalous.
Oh, this is interesting. Wait, what? There's another news on our competitive Overwatch currently being posted. Now, okay, this is hot off the press. I'm not sure how how true this is, but we just talked about the Vitality thing. And then someone, I'm not sure who Kugito is, said a guy for the gamer? From the game, like, okay, so apparently Vitality wanted to acquire them. And the translation, here's my poor translation of his words. The reason why I made this title for this section of my PowerPoint presentation, our esports organizers are really not interested in Overwatch, is because Team Vitality did reach out to us and was made them give up acquiring us is simply because our offer was too high, while we still want to remain our owner rather than transfer this position to Team Vitality. And that's why they did not acquire us. That is all. So I think it's just equal to they were refused by us. And after that, they just claim they are not interested in Overwatch. I think their CEO is a pretty asshole on this. So despite our offer, indeed a little bit too high, somebody still accepted it. Anyway, we finally got rich people from Saudi Arabia to accept this price. As Saudi Arabia accepted this offer, it reflected that our offer got no problem when it's their CEO's fault. I'm just saying. Okay, the legibility of that translation is...
Sure, yeah.
Questionable as well, but like...
Okay, Carlos, why at all?
It's certainly interesting.
Huh. Okay, am I missing something, or is this from the gamer? Yeah, from the gamer. So FTG, the Korean team with Alpha E, Bernard, Belisaria, Finn, Flora, Violet. Does this not kind of soft confirm that they did get a Saudi team sponsor?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Still not announced,
so like,
but
we don't know who it is, but we know that, like the Reddit comment section shows, Violet indeed got some money. So that's interesting. It is interesting that Vitality was kicking around. Like, I think we adequately, you know, primed everybody that, like, teams are kicking around. Teams are interested. Teams want to get out there, and they have these stipends for the World Cup, so why not use them? And this just sounds like from the gamer just asked for some things, you know, negotiated a little hard, and Vitality didn't want to play ball.
Sounds like they were wild that this, yeah, this how ruthlessly this guy lied in my face, but yeah, fair play.
I mean, gotta play the cards, I suppose. Play the game.
Yeah,
PR, whatnot, optics. We love an optics buzzword, but that is interesting. Happy to see that. There is more, again, there's more interest in Asia, which
keep in mind,
always kind of was the case.
I did not know that Team Vitality was actually
right
making moves. I had also not heard that. Otherwise, I would have pressed him on that. So, because like Team Vitality has just gotten active in several other esports and has expanded, right? Like they taken on a StarCraft team that I think they just won another GSL Code S with one of their players. And then I think they picked up another squad from another team. So, yeah. I mean, to pick up from the gamer is, it's not like you're getting like first place points for Esports World Cup, but
it's not bad.
You'd have a like top 10 world team easily, right?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Definitely. Well, my guy, I know for future interviews how I have to take what you're telling me, I guess. We learn.
That's information that you gotta know. So, all right. Well, that definitely puts a fun little twinkle and a ripple into the plans of some. Definitely teases some fun news in the future that I'm sure we'll cover. Anything else coming down the pipeline?
No, not really. I'm just trying to get some interviews on the records, trying to get that new format out, working on another format. And then, honestly, like the more I look at this, also looking more and more, you know, just on the side, getting more and more invested in CS as an esport that, like, I'm also currently just playing CS.
Okay.
So, like, it's just fun at the moment as well. But also, the scene is just dope, you know? Like, the type of stuff... Like, if you go on hltv.org right now, you would probably find, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 competitions going on simultaneously at any given point, right? That's just not... Like, it's just a different environment completely in comparison. Now, is it easy to derive value as a journalist in that community? I think, like, in fairness, like, there's always an element of, like, hear, like, if I'm reaching out to someone, they are likely to respond to me. That's not true. Yeah. It's yes, right?
No. Yeah, it's definitely a little bit harder. That's for sure.
Yeah, so we'll
can't
see.
Can't imagine.
We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, if you're into that CS content, get out some tax shooter stuff. This has got some stuff coming down, hopefully. All right. That's 341. I'm going to go watch Wheel of Prime and hate it. Everything that it's worth.
Based. All right.
We'll see you next week. We'll get some games in. See you then.